Welcome to the Menopause Moguls Podcast, where you'll learn how to slay in menopause and in entrepreneurship at the same damn time. I'm your host, Dr. Joyelle, a board-certified OBGYN, the menopause mogul, and the startup business coach for Black perimenopausal and menopausal women. Are you a professional woman, 40 and over, who's afraid of how you'll look, feel, and even think when you approach menopause? Or you want to take back control of your mind, body, and spirit during your menopausal transition? Are you 40 and over and want to build and launch your own business, doing something you absolutely love and create the life you want on your own terms? Are you 40 and over and want to reclaim your power, joy, and time during your menopausal transition and beyond so you can pursue your wildest dreams? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you are where you are supposed to be. This podcast will not only prepare you for what to expect during the menopausal transition, but equip you with simple strategies to launch a thriving business while managing menopausal symptoms with ease and in optimal health. Ladies, you will learn that menopause is not the end, but the beginning of your next level. As you launch your own business, your own brand that dominates in your industry like a mogul. So let's get started so you can slay your day like a menopause mogul and build your legacy. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Menopause Moguls Elevation Talks. This is your host, Dr. Joy L. I am super excited about this conversation today, y'all. Like this guest right here, just get ready. I'm about to read her bio, introduce y'all. Just after her bio, y'all gonna be like, okay, who is this woman? Who is this Black woman, right? All right, so let me get started and introduce you. She is a women's health advocate, transformational coach, unapologetic hype girl. Dr. Taniqua Miller is a board-certified OBGYN and National Certified Menopause Practitioner. She prides herself on her commitment to supporting women and girls through their reproductive transitions and beyond. After 14 years in academic medicine, Dr. Miller experienced professional burnout and made the decision to pause her clinical practice. During her time away, she read a devotional giving her a new call to action, Be Boundless. As a first-generation American college graduate and physician, she now tells her story of burnout and her secret weapon to living a boundless life, quitting. Dr. Miller received her BA in psychology from Yale University and completed her medical degree from Harvard Medical School. But don't let the Ivy League stats fool you. Dr. Miller's relatability and authenticity brings her audiences and clients closer to the truest versions of themselves. She is a champion of equity in women's healthcare and a committed educator of medical students and trainees of color. She's a transformational speaker and coach for her signature program, Burnout to Boundless. Her mission is simple: helping burnt-out first-generation professional women of color quit. That's a capital Q-U-I-T. Quit so that they live the life of their dreams. Welcome, welcome, Dr. Taniqua. I'm going to bring you to the stage.
Thank you for having me. Oh, I am so excited. I told you, I was like, Mama, I made it.
Like, come on here this stage, honey. Just bring it, bring it. But thank you so much, Dr. Taniqua, for being here. We just going to jump into this conversation, right? Yeah. So I want you to start with your story of professional burnout. Now, before you start your story, can you just give like a little snippet, an explanation of what professional burnout is so people in the audience who don't kind of know what that means, they may be going through it and like, what's that? What does that actually look right. like? Give a little snippet of that and then tell us your story of how you kind of came about you realizing that you had professional burnout.
Absolutely. So, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of the idea of burnout really puts the onus on the individual, especially when you look at the definition itself. So the definition of professional burnout is a decrease in your professional efficacy, like how effective do you feel in your role, sheer mental and physical exhaustion as it relates to your job, and a lot of cynicism or negativity towards the work that you're doing. And so for me, you have to like go way back. Way back, I was the kid that grew up in public housing in the Bronx, but always had this like interest in the female body. Like I was learning my own body. Nobody was talking to me about my body. So, you know, the Encyclopedia Britannica, I used to take them off the shelf. We had the whole set. Yes. And I literally would read about like what was happening in my body. I remember getting my menstrual period at the age of 10, thought I was dying and did not have people telling me what was happening. So I went to the book and I learned. And that was always I was always intrigued by the female body. So I knew I wanted to be in women's health. I didn't know how to do it. At the time, we had the Cosby Show and good old Dr. Huxtable. Can I still say that, right?
Yeah.
But I was always like, wow, like all of Denise's and Vanessa's friends would go to him to ask their questions and have their needs met. And I was just like, here I am, girl from the Bronx, Taniqua, with a name like Taniqua. I want to be that person to little girls that look like me, who didn't have someone in their corner really reassuring them about what was happening with their bodies. Fast forward, I obviously super bright kid, but every journey, every step of the way, I noticed a pattern that anytime I was pushing other people out of their comfort zones, mm-hmm. I was told to tamp down. So I think of my experience when I was in high school and I had a guidance counselor who basically was like, why don't you look at these schools over here? I had the top GPA. I actually did really well on my SATs, but she was telling me to kind of look at more smaller liberal arts school, which were fine. But when I would say, well, actually, this person told me to apply to Yale, she was just like, nah, I don't think that you'll get in. Well, I did, right? So that was the first piece. And then even like through Yale, trying to navigate pre-med and things like that, I always felt like I was trying to be someone that I wasn't. And so fast forward to the decision to go to medical school after taking 2 years off, because literally I was like, maybe medicine is not for me. And then I was like, maybe it is. And I get into Harvard and it was incredible. The first 2 years of my clinical years, I felt super empowered. I was learning. I was like, this is exactly what I wanted to do. And then I got onto my clinical rotations. And when I got onto my clinical rotations, I noticed three things. One, abuse. Straight up abuse. The way that medical students or even trainees are treated in medicine, and I literally am working on a passion project, Medicine's Broken Promise to the Little Black Girl, opinion piece, because you get onto these wards, you're told to like strive and be these amazing people, but then you experience a lot of abuse. And a lot of it, you can't really defend yourself. You can't even stand up for yourself. Mm-hmm. I was called angry. I was told that I had an attitude and I was like, who, me? Like, you know, and so you learn very early to put your mask on. And I had to learn that because in those environments, your ability to get to the next level is dependent on someone saying, okay, she's worthy of getting into the next level. Regardless of your grades, regardless of how you perform, it really was a lot of subjectivity in terms of how people would evaluate you. So that's the first thing. Second thing, I witnessed burnout like in my face. And so much so that when I was on my OBGYN rotation, which I don't know how I went into OBGYN after all of that, I literally had to take a break from medical school. We had a lot of flexibility with our scheduling and I knew I wanted to do women's health, but then I went onto my rotation and I saw some of the unhappiest people ever. Mm. They were working hard, they were doing patient care, but that kind of love for the craft of medicine just was not there. And I was stuck. I was like, I didn't do all this work to be like those folks.
Exactly.
You know? It wasn't for me. And then the third thing that I noticed was that you have to like compromise a lot of your true personality during the journey. So blonde have more fun girls, but I couldn't show up on my rotations with blonde hair, right? And in fact, in my role as a medical educator, there were actually these cases where Black women who changed their hairstyles very frequently from like braids or maybe wigs or like a natural style or another protective style, that they actually had people like make comments about the hair that they're untrustworthy because you know what I mean? So it hurt me that like I had to make really small And there were parts of me that I had to really conform to some like aesthetic, like you pull back the hair, you put on the black suit, you try to bring as little attention to yourself as possible. So I was operating this way even into residency, where the microaggressions and the frank racism got a little bit stronger, but I was tough. That's when I was first diagnosed with anxiety, because I would get chest pain on certain rotations where the abuse was really palpable. And then I went into my clinical job. So, you know, new graduate, new baby, my husband and I are just finishing, and we have doctor jobs. We're making six figures. We're making that good old money. That's the good old job that we're supposed to have, right? Family proud. We made that social contract. Doctor now. Use a doctor, right? But then you start looking around and realizing that a lot of that, those things that I experienced as a medical student, the abuse, the burnout, and the conformity was just rinse and repeat, even in my attending job.
Right.
So when you realize that you have this creativity and this innovation, and it might be different from the status quo, you were quickly put back in your box. Whether that is by intentionally not putting you up for leadership roles, or it's intentionally like really kind of like casting you aside. And that was what was starting to happen to me, especially around the DEI space, diversity, equity, inclusion space. And I remember this one particular day being in my car after having a meeting where I was told, me, a whole me, that I was not being inclusive enough because I was centering the voices and the experiences of Black and Brown applicants to our residency program. And we had had a problem recruiting diverse trainees to our residency program who came from underrepresented backgrounds in medicine and frankly in Atlanta. And I remember sitting in my car, the chest pain at a roar, like, and I literally pulled into the parking lot and I could not get out of my car. I was sobbing. I was raging on the inside. And I remember being like, is this what I worked for?
Yeah.
You can give me a paycheck, but this ain't worth it. And remember, I called you. You know, because I know that you had made that transition. And I remember just feeling like, this ain't it. This cannot be it. And I had a colleague, and I thank God for my colleague, because at that point, I thought I just had to soldier on. I didn't, there weren't examples who had taken time off to really kind of just reset and reevaluate. And my colleague said, I have seen this in other colleagues. You are going to leave medicine in a blaze of glory and not maybe in a way that you want. I think you need a break. You are burnt out. Now, Black Girl Tea was like, oh, we don't take breaks.
We don't take breaks.
We don't take breaks with that, right? Because there was so much that we had to do, that whole like work twice as hard to get half as much. So I was like, I'm not taking a break. Like, I can't take a break. And then when I found myself crying on labor and delivery after my second cesarean delivery, and it wasn't even 10 o'clock yet, I was like, yeah, no, I need that break.
Like, how do I get that break? How do I get that break?
And even in that break, I was uncomfortable being with myself. Like, I remember being on the couch and being like, so what do I do now? And I remember like scheduling all of these coffee chats. Thought I was cute. Like, tell me about your burnout experience. And I had my little pen and I was taking notes. And I was like, what book should I read to fix myself? Because everything that I saw online said, the antidote to burnout is resilience training. You need to be more resilient. You need to adopt a gratitude practice. You need to be more mindful, do some mindful meditation practices. And so I thought I was broken. I thought I was the one that needed fixing.
Right.
And a coach that I was working with at the time said, listen, I'll tell you all the books. I'll tell you exactly, you know, what I did during my burnout journey. But the thing that you haven't done is that you haven't sat and just be. Sit with this.
Get
to know Taniqua again. And that is when the journey started, when I realized that I had become so far removed from the little girl who would pull the books off the shelf and thumb through the Encyclopedia Britannica, learning about her bodies, and then holding court with the other girls in the neighborhood. Like, girl, did you know? I had moved so far from her.
Yeah.
Chasing someone else's roadmap because I didn't have one. I was first generation everything. And so I felt like that was the path that I had to go. I made this social contract that that was the path that I had to go. And I had gotten so far from myself. And in those 4 weeks that I took off, by the end, I had made a commitment to get back to myself. And I did that by starting to quit.
That is amazing. That is amazing. And I think, you know, what you said in regards to just learning to just be, I think that is the hardest thing for us, especially as Black women, when we are so used to doing, right? Doing this, doing that, doing this, doing that, upon, you know, based off the expectations of others.
Right.
As opposed to the expectations of ourselves.
Yep.
So I love that you, after your little coffee chat stuff, you're like, oh, wait, maybe I should just be with my coffee chat with myself. So I love that you were able to do that. And like you said, learn ways to get back to yourself so that you can then move forward and to do just amazing things based off of you and your brain and whatever your desires are. So I love, love, love that. But you, like I said, you tapped into what we are conditioned to do is just to just keep doing. Keep doing right. this, keep doing that, keep doing this, because they expect you to do this. They expect you to be this way and do that because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do.
And I say, nope.
We ain't doing that no more. We're not doing that. So you leaped into this boundless midlife journey now, which I love. Let me first ask you in regards to the whole midlife menopause space. Now, for me, I never expected myself to be in this space. Like, I never expected me to be talking about menopause. Because when I first came out of residency into private practice, I'm like, menopause, like, oh, these people. Like,
right.
That was my first thing. You know, my first impression, right? So I was surprised when I, like, came into the space. I'm like, I cannot believe I'm talking about and passionate about this midlife space.
Right.
So I wanted to hear from you. Is that something that you would kind of always thinking about in the back of your mind, like way back when? That's something that's kind of evolved as you have evolved.
Like, not at all. And what was so crazy, where I trained, we actually had like a midlife health center.
Really?
One of the big people in the North American Menopause Society, she basically built that midlife health center, but it wasn't really integrated into our curriculum other than like the obligatory lecture that you have to have for residency.
Gotcha.
Okay. And I remember even when we would talk about it, it was always seen as like this separate thing. The things that were really like sexy were like gynecology and all of the high tech obstetric stuff and doing crazy things in obstetric. And like menopause was just like, oh, we have this lecture. And we didn't really even see it as patients. And what happened was I started off in my journey as a new attending. And where I practiced, we had a heart health center, a big heart health center here in Atlanta. And so anytime there was someone that came in and had experienced any sort of like heart attack or any like ischemia, they had these care managers that would like kind of dispatch them to different areas to make sure that they were up to date with their overall health care. So this one day, there was a woman that was sent to me who had had a heart attack, and she was on hormone therapy, but of course, because she had the heart attack, she was summarily it was summarily taken away. And I remember seeing her doing my routine well woman exam, and there was just something off. And me being me, like, I was trying to be all professional, you know, with the white coat. And finally, I was like, something seems off. Like I just said, something seems off. Like, tell me a little bit about like what's going on. Like, because there was something that she wasn't saying. It was just that hunch.
Yeah.
And that's when she told me that she was on hormone therapy. She was about 54, 55. I can't remember now, but I think 54, 55. Of course, they stopped her medication when she had her heart attack. And she was absolutely miserable. Mm-hmm. Wasn't sleeping. Her mood was poor. All of these things. And I like just started digging in the back of my brain. Like, gosh, okay. I don't really remember what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
I think there's like a medication that I can give her. And I ended up putting her on an antidepressant, like a low dose SNRI. And I said, well, come back in 4 weeks and like crossing my fingers. I hope.
Right.
And she came back, lipstick on, bopping in, and was like, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. And it was just like this light bulb moment. And I said, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. You had been seeing all of these cardiologists. They took you off your medications. You were miserable. Mm-hmm. I get it. They want to like make sure that your heart is ticking. I get it.
Right.
We're a whole person.
Yes.
And now I realize that in medicine, we tend to silo our organ systems.
We tend
to really like break up our patients into like these like very different organ systems, but it's a patient. It's a whole human being.
It's a whole person. Exactly.
It's a whole person. And right. this small intervention, this small, cheap, it's not sexy. It's not anything cutting edge, but just listening to her.
Yes. Yes. How about that? Yeah.
About that. Right. Just listening to her made such a difference. And something just was like this light bulb moment that was just like, it felt good to help her. Mm-hmm. And so I went all in. Like I did my first Menopause 101 course at the annual convention for American College of OBGYNs.
Right.
Made me even more excited because then it opened me to the world of cardiovascular health, cerebral vascular health, bone health, all of these other things. And I was like, ooh, this is interesting. And then that's when I discovered NAMS, which is now the Menopause Society.
Right.
And I went to their conference, which was in Vegas, which was really good to be in Vegas. And I just wanted to learn and learn and learn. But then not just learn, I became certified, I think in like 2015, but to be able to deliver that type of care, that menopausal care in my own special way.
Right.
During this time, I started shedding those layers of conformity. I started saying that, you know, medicine teaches you to be physician here and patient here, where you know everything about the patient and they know nothing about you. Mm-hmm. And I decided to say, no, 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 let me center her. Let me ask her, what are your goals? Pull up a chair, sis, let's talk.
Yeah.
Coaching her before I even like was coaching her as we talked about like shifting medications, but also how do you deal with this sexual tension or this sexual like issue that you have with your partner? How do you deal with where you're taking care of older family members and invalidating like, yeah, sis, this is hard. Yeah. And it was like some of the, brought me the biggest joy to see people feeling well.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And being so appreciative of someone listening.
Yeah.
Just listening.
Yeah.
It's funny how
listening is, you know, especially in this field of medicine, listening is so, it seems simple, right? Like if you just listen to people, but it's so like, it's lacking, right? Like mm-hmm. I know you've seen so many women come into your office just like, no one's listening to me. No, I don't feel heard. I don't feel seen, especially Black women, right? Like, I know you've seen that, heard it. I've definitely heard that. Yeah. And just the art of just listening.
And that's what they teach us.
Right.
Remember in medical school, those first couple of years, they're like, listen,
yes.
look, yes. observe, all of that stuff. And then when you actually get out into the practice of medicine, it's like, we don't have time for that.
We don't have time for listening. You got 15 minutes. That's what you got. That's it. And chop, chop.
Chop, chop. It's crazy to me. It's so crazy.
Right.
And so I think that when you get into a space, especially realizing just the profound psychosocial adjustments that are happening around the menopausal transition, I think it makes it even more special.
Yes.
That in a gynecology, especially, you know, that puberty, I mean, they separate the boys and the girls in the mm-hmm. class and they talk to them about their bodies and all of these things.
Right.
And then there's like a whole pediatric gynecology, yes. adolescent gynecology, adolescent medicine arm in GYN and in pediatrics.
Right.
And pregnancy, pregnancy gets all the jam, mm-hmm. you know. And then when you get to the end of a woman's reproductive potential.
Yeah.
They just fall off the cliff.
Exactly. Like, all right, we're done with you. We don't really care. We don't really care. Right. Exactly. You can't get pregnant anymore. Okay. Well, have a good life. Like, what in the world? but what about my heart? What about my bones? What about
the next my mental life?
Yeah.
A whole lifetime, right?
A whole lifetime, exactly.
And so it's been really good to empower patients in that way, make them feel seen, make them feel heard, and realize that this is like another chapter.
Yeah.
And we're older, we're wiser, yes. we fine, honey. I don't want to ever be 20 again. Well, my knees might want to.
Right, true. Exactly. My kids might want me to, like you said, my body may want to keep up with these dang kids around here. Right. However, I am very happy. You know, like right. as you wished me happy birthday earlier, I'm like, I'm happy to be 48. Like, I, like, being going back to 20? What? I don't want to go back there. Like, I'm good. And looking forward to 50. I, like, bring it.
The wisdom that you have, the just everything. Like, I, in all of this, like, I'm so proud of me now.
Yeah.
And yeah. I have compassion for that 30-something-year-old who was just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And trying to make it and just right. trying to, you know, and I thank her because she did have to wear the mask sometimes. She did have to keep herself small, but it was only to get me here. So yes. I have a lot of love for that little T.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, like you said, I know you work with your clients and myself working with my clients, given them the permission to do that, right? Mm-hmm. To have that self-compassion and that grace for that little girl, for that 20-year-old, for that 30-year-old, and mm-hmm. and be grateful, even though those areas where we had to wear the mask, where we had to shrink ourselves, where we had to, well, we felt like we had to shrink ourselves in order mm-hmm. to survive, in order to do the things that we wanted to do, now give ourselves permission to actually be boundless, right? Like, There's no limit here. There we are open to so many possibilities, but I think as you said, and as also as I coach my clients on in regards to trusting yourself, right? Trusting yourself first after getting to know you again, right?
Yes! The biggest question that like people would ask us like during this time, it was like, well, what do you like to do?
Yeah.
I truthfully did not know.
Yeah.
Like so much of like when I wasn't at work, my mind was on work.
Yes.
So being able to kind of like sit still, even in this entrepreneurial journey that I'm on, like I realized, oh, I like to work.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
My husband is his love language is quality time. He wants me to watch all these shows with him at night when really I just want to be reading a book. Like, and so I do my part. Okay, let's watch. Well, actually, we just watched American Gladiators. It was really good. But like, you know, like, I'll have that time. But then I'm like, no, I want to learn.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, like, reading books for a chore. They bring me joy hearing people's stories. Like,
yes.
It's just been so fun getting to know me
yeah.
and having the space to do it and giving myself permission to do
yes.
it.
Yes. Yes. Permission without the guilt.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a big thing for me, having that, giving myself permission without feeling guilty about, you know, not doing the thing, not working on that thing or, right. you know, whatever those things are, like giving yourself permission to do it, being with yourself, doing the things that actually bring you joy, enjoy, and without feeling guilty about it. And, you know, like I said, giving yourself grace and compassion to be like, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about a boundless midlife with your people, with your clients, what does that actually mean? Like when someone's kind of coming up in these late 30s, early 40s, getting into these midlife years, what does a boundless midlife look like?
Yeah. So I'm going to take you back to the day that I discovered the word boundless.
Okay.
It was like during my medical leave where I was sitting on the couch, like, what am I doing with my life? I just felt really down. Like, mm-hmm. it was just one of those days that I was just like, how do we get here?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you are this high achieving woman. You've been to all of these like incredible, like on paper, like sis, you killing it.
Yeah.
And here I am sitting on my couch having to admit that I was burnt out all alone. The kids were at camp. The husband's at work. Mm-hmm. I'm like, how did I get here? And my therapist at the time had recommended this devotional. I was like, I want an empowerment devotional. I don't want somebody to tell me, ooh, wade in the water. Like, I was like, I want somebody to tell me, like, rise up, sis.
Right.
So this particular day, I opened up the devotional because I really didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I realized I have this on all of my sticky notes. It says tap into the source. That's one of the things that I have here, tap into the source. Mm-hmm. And on this particular day, the title of the small devotional was Be Boundless. And it just caught my attention. Now, we all kind of intuitively know what boundless means.
Right, right.
But as I read the passage, it said, be life's muse. And I just thought that that was so beautiful. Like, life should be looking at you like, dang, girl. And when I was sitting on my couch, life was like, dang, girl.
Yeah. You know? So, like,
yeah, like, this ain't it. And so me being the nerd that I am, I literally went to the dictionary and I looked up boundless, and it meant vast, immense, and without bounds. And I immediately was like, I feel so bound right now. I feel so bound. Like, I'm bound to so many things, to expectations, to contracts that I have with family and society about being this type of physician. I feel bound by my job. Anytime I'm trying to step outside of the box and color outside of the lines, I feel like I'm put back in. Or there are consequences to that specifically. I felt so bound. And to think that I can like have this like vast, this like immense life, it made me realize that I was thinking really, really small. And I was feeling really bound, and I needed to do something about it. I led the coaching group in self-trust the other day. And one of the other things that came up for me reading this devotional was this concept of, I went to Catholic school for 12 years. And one of the first things that you learn from scripture in Catholic school is that, like, you are made in the image and likeness of God.
Right.
And I was like, huh, immense, vast, big, infinite, the beginning and the end. And I said, well, if I'm meeting that image and likeness, then why am I sitting on this couch feeling sorry for myself? Am I living a boundless life? If I don't think that the creator, whomever your like your spiritual guide is, is infinite and boundless, then why am I sitting on this couch not dreaming big, not hoping for something big, not allowing my brain to like create and do all of the things that intuitively were in my strength set that I was trying to do within this, the confines of this system, that I was basically getting batted down, like, no. And I had to figure out a way to start clearing out the mess in my brain that told me that I had to be a people pleaser, that told me that my success relied on the opinions of others and that external validation. And I made a commitment going back to work that I'm going to be boundless. Now, I didn't make a commitment, because there were still things that I felt like I was unlearning, right?
Right.
It was an active process of unlearning. But I said, I'm going to choose this boundless life. I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew that what I was living wasn't it.
Right, right. Yeah. And when you said, you know, like you said, being bound to things, being bound to other people's expectations, I think that's the, you know, one of the big things, especially as high achieving women, high achieving Black women, we're bound to the expectation, like you say, of doing twice as good as the next person, bound to the expectation that we have to be on and popping like great all the time. And, you know, all those things, and bound to, you know, act in a certain way because we don't want to be perceived as, you know, the angry Black woman.
Right.
You know, that those type of things, you know? So like you said, being boundless, I think that's so important for people who are watching to know that it is okay to release yourself from those boundaries, create your own boundaries within yourself that protect you from you know, those expectations, so you can just continue on doing the things that you feel, like you said, you are being called to do, whoever's guiding you, you're being called to do, and feeling like you can do it because there are no limits. Because, like you said, in the image of God, we can do anything. We are destined to be this awesome thing, is, but long as we believe it, right? And
ooh, tap into,
girl, you know, and tap into that. Like, that is, you know, going on the journey, especially going these midlife years, going through all the ups and downs that we go through, just as women, physically and mentally, being able to tap into the idea of, we can certainly be boundless as we are transitioning into right. different transitions, whether it's in our health, whether it's in our careers, whether it's in our families, whatever that transition is, we can still be boundless as we are moving right. through those things.
And so, it feels effortless. Like, I will tell you, I, now that I'm allowing myself to dream, one of the ways that I dream is like by going for walks and mm-hmm. listening to like inspirational things. And so I'm cooking up my new journey. But literally, I know it is the thing that I'm supposed to do because it doesn't require much mental effort. Mm-hmm. Now, there are steps, like you got to build, like I'm right. not doing that, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm working hard, but there's some ease about it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. there's some ease about it. And I feel like when you do make the decision to be boundless and go for it, just go for it, that there is like this ease that settles into your body that lets you know that you're on the right track. And the things that you do that, and then there are moments that you really have a lot of self-doubt. And mm-hmm. so that's when you have your community to coach you through that.
Right.
But when you make a decision, and this is like my mantra, like any decision that I make is a good decision because I'm oriented towards good. Mm. So sometimes we think, you know, that there's like, we make bad decisions. And actually that's a limiting belief that's placed on us, especially as like women, especially as Black women.
Right.
And that's a mistake. That's a mistake. I wouldn't have done that. Right. But realizing that any decision you make, if it's coming from that goodness in you, it's the right decision. So even if it's a flop.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. It's so crazy because we still doing virtual church. So my husband,
look, my
husband will sit down with the coffee, 9:30. He's very diligent and diligent, and he watches the service. But this is one thing that my pastor said, and so he will remind me of that when I'm like, he was like, "You're into what's good. Make a decision, knowing that it will be a good decision, and even if I have to pivot and be agile and make adjustments, that's okay."
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And on the same field in that, for me, as that goes also with challenges that come, you know, that come upon me as I've, you know, health-wise, professional, whatever, challenges that we go through, circumstances that we go through, we also, for me, you know, being a child of God and knowing that even though there are challenges, even though it may be painful, it may be uncomfortable, that God's working it out for my greater good eventually. Right. Like, it may not look like in the moment,
right?
But as things evolve and, you know, you get to the other side, it's like, oh, that's why that happened.
Yeah.
That's why that challenge, that's why that was so challenging.
You know, I was on my walk. And I was listening to this podcast, and I had just gotten introduced to Myron Golden like this year. Like, I don't really know much about Myron Golden, but I was listening to a podcast, and he was the guest, and the host of the podcast was talking about like limiting beliefs, that he had these beliefs of wanting to make $1 million, but he didn't feel like he could. And Myron said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Because of limiting beliefs." And they were talking about like this, the duality in everything.
Right.
This idea that our brains want us to only see the negative, but everything has two sides.
Right.
So when you do have those challenges, when you are facing those challenges and it seems that you are in a tough season and you're like, listen here, like I learned the lesson.
Right.
I learned. But try not to stay in that negative feeling. Because I do think it's worthwhile to like acknowledge like this stinks. Right.
Right.
But then say, what is the other side?
Yeah.
What is the other side that I need to find? What is the positive that is in this? And he talked about his own journey of having polio as a child. And right. so he had a lot of physical limitations. And he would talk about his brothers. He was like a whole bunch of brothers. And they would run around and he couldn't do those things. And as a child, he was really angry because it's like, why would this happen to me? Like, and he said, but I looked at the other side of it. And he believes that God slowed his body down, his physical body down to speed his mind up. And as y'all know, he is a
multi-millionaire, exactly.
motivational speaker, business coach, like life-changing person. And so that really inspired me because sometimes we get into these spaces where we're just like, again, this ain't it, right?
Right.
But then being able to sit in that, because I didn't always want to sit in the discomfort of being angry or sad or whatever, but sit in that and then do the work to find the other side. Right. What is the positive that's going to come out of this? And so I really do feel like there is that balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Not sitting, like you said, sitting as the victim, like, woe is me. Like I said, it's good to sit with those feelings, those emotions, but mm-hmm. like you said, looking at the other side of it and what is the lesson? What am I supposed to mm-hmm. learn from this? And,
right.
you know, knowing that it is temporary, even though temporary may be days, maybe months, maybe years. But it is temporary, right? Nothing lasts forever, right? So indeed. I love that. So let's kind of go. We talked about boundless. Let's talk about quitting. The big Q-U-I-T. Okay. How did you quit your good job?
Like my good old job.
Your good old job.
My grandmother was like, you did what?
Exactly. How did you quit the good old job? How did you do that?
Quitting actually came later. Like I actually created a process called quitting, but it is what I did when I returned to work.
Mm-hmm.
I took inventory of all of the things that were mentally causing googly muck in my head, mm-hmm. frankly. And I like literally made out a list of what can I let go of? What can I shed? So that I don't really have all of that mental strain and stress that I was experiencing that I felt led to my burnout.
Right.
And a lot of it had to do with all of the free 99 work I was doing at work. And I literally started listing out things, like parts of my job came up, right? Like I was like, I really want to lean into GYN. I don't want to spend a night in the hospital anymore doing obstetrics. Like I want to change the way that I'm practicing. So I just wrote a list, and I just put it there. And one of the things at the top of the list was my role as chair of my DEI committee. It was something that was a passion project of mine. You know, I made the joke that I was DEI before there was DEI, mm-hmm. you know? And so it was painful to think that this was also my biggest source of stress. And so I thought about it, but intuitively I knew that like I couldn't stay in this role. I was suffering. My family was suffering. Mm. They were my children were scared of me. Like I would come home and they would just get out of the way. And like everything was, I'm sorry. And I was just like, holy cow. Like this is not the life that I right. want myself. And this is not the harm that I want to inflict on my children.
Right.
And so I was afraid, of course, because there's all of these expectations. Who else would do it? Who's going to further the mission? All of these things. And then I finally had to say, no. If you stay here, what will happen to you? What will happen to your family? Mm. And intuitively, I knew what it was. I had to ask myself, why are you doing this? And it was like, well, maybe I can get promoted. I can get recognition. I can put another notch on my resume. And finally, it wasn't worth it. And so I took action and I just drafted a resignation letter. That was like one of the first things that I did. And I kept it in my drafts folder. And anytime I would have a frustration, I would look at it. Mm-hmm. I think it was really telling that it took me like 5 minutes to write this beautifully written resignation letter. It was like on my heart that yeah. is what I wanted to do.
Right.
And then finally a day came and I just knew that I needed to let go. And I pressed the send button and something remarkable happened. A weight lifted.
Mm.
I felt free. I felt like it was no longer my responsibility and I could just sever that. Mm-hmm. The shame that I thought I would feel of like saying no actually turned around into this rebel nature. Like, ooh, you just told them no. And I realized that I had been holding on to all of these things out of fear that people would look at me differently. They would think I was lazy. They would think all of these things, but yeah. I know my true self. I know that that's not why I was letting go. And so I started testing the waters and started quitting other things, writing the letter, putting it in my drafts folder or PTA. Nope, can't be in that role, but I can send you a check for $50. So, you know, right. that's the thing. Mm-hmm. And there was this like power that I felt like I was reclaiming over my time and over my life. And then I started like pouring back into myself in other ways, specifically with coaching. And the final quitting, like I had been exercising this muscle that helped me build self-trust to realize that my world didn't fall apart, mm-hmm. that I was now opening up my mental space to all of these new opportunities, all of these yes. opportunities for growth, spending time with my children, being present at home because I wasn't stressed even when I was at work, still thinking about some of these things. And then finally, I kicked and screamed, but I just knew that I wanted more. And I remember that conversation that I had with my husband the night before I actually resigned, I had drafted an email literally within 5 minutes again. And we sat and he was like, I support you. And the next day I pressed send and there was just like this relief that like, okay. Now there was still a little mind drama.
Of course. Yes. What did you just do?
What did I just do?
Right.
But I realized that when I sent that letter in my voice, there were people in that community that was like, I'm proud of you, sticking up for yourself. And not that I needed their validation, but it did feel good to know that I was making the right decision. I made that decision for myself, but then I was showing others what was possible.
Yes.
You know, sometimes I felt like I was living in the matrix and then all of a sudden I'm outside of the matrix and I'm just like, don't you say what's going on here? But that's their journey and I'm on my journey. And so when I think about quitting, people get really nervous. They're like, quit my job. and I say, you know, it's cute, tongue in cheek, quit, but really it's doing the work of mental quitting, not people pleasing, letting go what's no longer serving you, being intentional about the things that you do, because sometimes we try to hoard opportunities, right? Like there were people in my department who were like professors who would like want to go to all of these 5011 talks. And I'm like, why not give that away to people who are younger, who are coming up, who are just as qualified? Why are we not lifting people up? And it's because like we're taught in these environments to hoard and to hold on to things, even if it's not serving us.
Yeah.
One of the first things that I needed to do to get to here was to just mentally let go.
Yeah.
And know that my world is not going to fall apart. Mm-hmm. Know that I'm going to still have my family that loves me. I still have a roof over my head. I still have food to eat. I still have a bed to sleep in. And that was what gave me the courage then to then pour into myself once I can get rid of that mental googly muck, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Like you said, opening up space, more space in your head and allowing yourself to, like you said, to do the things that you truly are being called to do. I love, love, love that. It's getting close to the end of our chat and I'm kind of sad. I'm like, we can talk forever. Okay.
Yes.
So, but we have to wrap it up. But I do want you to talk about, I'm going to ask you the rapid fire questions. Before I ask you them, I want to want you to give the opportunity to tell us about Burnout to Boundless, your program, whatever you got going on new, you know, just put it out there for people.
Yeah, so life is evolving in some of the most amazing ways right now. I have my Burnout to Boundless coaching program. It is just like this transformational program for women who are just like me, feeling burnt out, feeling like they need permission to pivot and they don't know how, but really dipping their toe into entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I'm all about letting your full-time 9-to-5 fund the new come up, right? Yes. So, but in order to do that, you have to mentally like separate yourself from the broken promise of that 9-to-5. Like, I really think that that's what it is. That was the experience for me, medicine's broken promise. Mm-hmm. And lean into whatever vision that you have, how you want to serve the world. And so the program is a 16-week one-to-one container with me, where we really get intensive about going from the mindset work to shift from employee and the hurt and harm that you may have experienced in that profession to taking the leap, knowing that the net will appear and putting your business offer into the world. And really the foundational stuff, like what does it mean to be a business owner? And how do you then price yourself so that you're profitable? And then do the work to eventually, if you decide, quit your 9-to-5.
Right.
So that is the program. You can follow me on Instagram, Taniqua Miller MD, and learn about all of my shenanigans, not just my coaching, but some other ventures that I'm going to be starting in the next few months.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm so excited. And yeah, just like follow me and learn all of my hijinks and and this incredible journey that I'm on.
Yes, follow her. I'm going to put her information in the show notes. You guys can, connect with her, follow her, work with her. She's the bomb, y'all. Bomb.com. Hey. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you.
I know you know this from the beginning. I was like, oh, Lord, I can do this, girl.
I don't know about this, JL. I don't know. But you are doing it and killing it. So keep going, sis. Keep going. The people out here, we need you, honey. We need you. All right. So the last few questions. All right. Number one, what brings you joy?
Flowers. I love flowers. My children and my husband popped up first, but I think that was really cliche.
Yeah.
But because everybody says that. But like, honestly, like being with flowers.
Yeah. I love that you said that. Like you said, most people are like, oh, it's my children. Like, which obviously, that's not obvious. Yeah, answer,
obvious.
Right? But it's like, what else? What else brings you joy? So I love that. Awesome. Okay. What is one piece of advice that you would tell the woman who has a very similar story to you or who aspires to become an entrepreneur?
Do not put all of your eggs in one basket. Feel the freedom to stretch yourself, stretch your imagination, take risks, and be willing to build.
Awesome. 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 Okay. Complete this sentence. I am blank years old and my superpower is?
I am 42 years old and my superpower is connection.
Ooh. Connection. All right. I love it. Love it. Love it. Thank you so much, Dr. Taniqua.
Thank you.
And you know, we'll have to, you know, we can talk again. We'll have to bring you back at some point. Exactly. We're going to have to, you know, have some more conversations.
I love it. Thank you
so thank you so much, my dear. All right. Take care.
Bye.
All right. Wasn't she wonderful? Like, again, you're a hype girl, your girl that will help you quit, right? As a woman of color, as a Black woman, this conversation just shows you how you are enough to quit, let go of all the things that are keeping you bound in order for you to just then lead a boundless life, and especially a balanced midlife. So thanks for watching. Please share the episode. As always, sending love and light to you all. Until the next time of Menopause Moguls Elevation Talks, I'll see y'all later. Take care. Thanks for listening. If you had any aha moments or learned something new, please let me know by leaving a review. And please share this episode and share this podcast with all the ladies that you know. Head on over to my website, drjoyelle.com, and subscribe to get my monthly newsletter and get all the tea on women's health news and business news. Also, join my private Facebook group, Menopause Moguls, so we can thrive in menopause and in business as we build our legacies together.